If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is how you can make the greater good motivation not seem cliche and boring. And I've seen that before. Can you give me something different, something else? And why sometimes it could frustrate me, that character motivation. Sometimes it can be done really well. If you were given the choice, Rich, to press a button to kill one person that saves a million.
Yes. Oh.
Welcome everyone to a Tutor Realm podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're doing a little bit of a character idea deep dive. This time we're doing it on the greater good.
The greater good.
Now, what does this character motivation mean? What does it mean politically? What does it mean for a character? How does it play? Do we like it? Do we not? What does it mean? And we're going to talk about it.
We are. Rich, what is, when you say the greater good for a character motivation, what does that even mean?
Typically, the greater good character motivation is, for most of the time, a villain. A villain that does terrible things, but they justify it as it's all for the greater good. The big Hollywood examples of Thanos in Marvel is he kills half the universe, but he says it's for the greater good, for the survival of all of the universe. Things like that. It's not the pure evil of, you know, Skeletor, of like, he's evil because he just loves being evil.
Mm.
None of that.
Like, we record these podcasts for the greater good.
Exactly. We do it for the greater good. It's not to push a, brain rot media into the internet zeitgeist for people to get hooked into and eventually, you know, rot their brains and
go into cycles
and make people think about, hey, look, I'm doing something. I'm listening to a podcast, and instead of reading, it feels equal. We're not doing any of that. We're doing it for the greater good.
So we have a little bit of villainy in us even talking about the greater good. Because
well,
when
the amount of times
that,
we talk about how YouTube is
awful, evil,
awful, evil,
wasting
terrible,
their time.
It shouldn't exist. Internet was mostly a mistake. Except
then,
for,
wait, then yeah. Where's the part where this is good for people? Where's the greater good in the end of this? Where are we going with this?
I'm still working on that.
Yeah, we got to bring it full circle. Okay.
We got to think that one through.
Okay.
I'm mostly listing off the stuff we do bad.
Okay, so maybe the greater good is, what are we
useless?
What
do we bring? Yeah.
Oh.
we sometimes get people to read a neat book.
So we just had a conversation. Someone was like, hey, I read Red Rising because of you, Austin. Hey, I read Wheel of Time because of you, Rich.
Now,
that's cool.
Are we a cope that people should be reading a book and then talking with other people and be a part of a community and, you know, touch grass and communicate with our fellow man? But we are putting a Band-Aid on the social problem of not any friends to talk about a book by giving our videos. And so ultimately, like, yeah, we're a good, but we're also a cope. We're the drug where they actually need to better their lives and improve their community, but instead they listen to our
Rich, video. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm getting confused.
Yeah, no, we went off topic a little bit. We're talking about character motivations and what it means. Not our character motivations.
Like, I don't... Villains. I actually, with that bit there, I think we kind of had a direction and went off track. And then that's one of the things this podcast bring for the greater good is, you know, sometimes people laugh at our ridiculousness. Sometimes you get
Sometimes. Well, that's now the unfortunate thing. We want to be serious people to... Oh,
well, here's the thing. We listen to us that's it. This is the come full circle. We make ourselves sometimes stupid. And, well, because we are mostly curious and stupid. We don't have all the answers. But for the greater good, we make ourselves look like buffoons. That is the full circle.
There we go.
So we are the laughing stock to make this just a greater community. And by the way, we do love this. We joke as much as we can. But just talking about this character detail with the greater good and a villain, it's really getting at, do the ends justify the means? The good old philosophy, the metaphysics.
The old utilitarian philosophy.
Utilitarian and maybe a little bit of consequentialism too. Because since we're going to talk about these two terms.
They're
and
almost one and the same, by the way.
A little bit of a different definition, but not, yeah, very similar. Because what we're going to get into, and I want to give some examples where this can be done well when people are writing characters, when we're reading a book. Oh, this is how you can make the greater good motivation not seem cliche and boring. And I've seen that before. Can you give me something different, something else? And why sometimes it could frustrate me, that character motivation. Sometimes it can be done really well. So sure. I think it's actually done well more with heroes than villains, but we'll...
Okay. We'll talk about that one.
Base thing to start with is when you're saying the greater good, we're talking about, do the ends justify the means? Does the trolley problem, do you pulling the lever instead of killing the five people, kill the one person because, well, the means of you're still killing the one person justified that you're not killing five? And utilitarianism, just to give this definition online, it is the doctrine that an action is right insofar as it promotes happiness and that the greatest happiness of the greatest number should be the guiding principle of conduct, versus consequentialism, which is of all the things a person might do at a given moment, the morally right action is the one with the best overall consequences. So utilitarianism kind of looks like general happiness, and then consequentialism is just the actual overall consequences itself. Very similar, but
both are kind of dealing with the idea of the scales between total happiness and total misery, and what action or decision or policy or whatever have you, where does it lean on those scales? Does it cause more happiness than misery? Then yes. Does it cause more misery than happiness? Then no. The danger with that kind of stuff, and I think where it gets into villains, and it very quickly becomes a villain, yeah. There's the utilitarian aspect of where you're comparing with the trolley problem of really scoped in of one versus five people dead. And it's – those are numbers that you could scale in your head, and it makes the scales harder to balance. If between one person and another –
Even I could do that math.
You could do that math. Where it becomes villain territory and how you can justify a lot of evil crap is utopianism. When utopia is the thing that you're comparing against, and that is the ultimate happiness, and that's infinite happiness. The utopia is everyone is happy all the time, and it basically justifies – any amount of misery.
All means you could do. So no matter what action, if it's immoral, well, for the greater good.
What could tip the scales in the misery side that is heavier than utopia? Because that's what you're dealing with. And so that's where a lot of villains come from is, oh, I'm trying to create a utopia And so they do all these awful things.
Which is where a lot of dystopian novels are really just utopias to the class that is up there. It's the utopia for the villain. It's the dystopian for all the people that are left out in society. So it's the utopia to some, dystopian to others. And that is that exact point where you're saying, hey, you can look at one versus five very easily. Go like, okay, if you were given the choice, Rich, to press a button to kill one person that saves a million. Yes.
Oh.
So.
Press the button and you kill your...
So if you were given that option of press it and you kill one person, if you don't press it, a million will die. There's a number for everybody where maybe everybody would eventually end justify the means, or what I like to say, ends explain the means for you, because
sure,
there's almost nothing that you could do to justify killing an innocent person.
And ultimately,
killing innocent person.
Yes, you can do a very awful thing,
yeah,
and it ultimately lead to a good result. That doesn't – just because it leads to a good result doesn't make the action good.
Right.
Like ultimately it kind of goes into what –
it explains why you did the action, but yeah, still makes it not moral.
But an action is isolated from its results. Yep. Ultimately – and I mean that's at least my philosophy, how I see it, is the ends are completely separated from – the actions it takes to get there. And from that standpoint, you can understand why someone will do a terrible thing, but it still means it's a terrible thing.
Yeah, I think so. We're going to have Jared Henderson on the podcast, one of these future episodes, who's a philosopher on YouTube. He's great. And yeah. From my little knowledge of philosophers like Immanuel Kant, he looks at humans as an end in and of themselves. So when different philosophers are kind of justifying what moral framework to give yourself, again, this is without using God as a framework, because you can use religion, you can use Christianity, Judaism, Islam, all, you can have your foundation in bedrock.
Hinduism,
you can use your bedrock as religion, but then using this as just a, if you're logically, quote-unquote, logically explaining where do morals come from. Well, is it subjective, objective? We had a whole episode on that, by the way. Check out that one where we talked about subjectivity versus objectivity in art. That was awesome. So now when we're talking about do the ends justify the means, would you press this button? The way that villains are way more easily seen as the greater good character is because it's very easy to, when you're talking about a story, when you're writing a story, to empathize and zone in on one character's emotional feelings. Because one thing that's true with all these philosophies, and whether, I don't want to make a blanket statement other than a lot of our morals and empathy is tied together. Why do we feel that is more the question of, is that from a deity, or is that come from biology? Whatever we feel, it comes emotionally. These are all, it's metaphysical, it's not real. It's all, what's it? It's so
now we're making weird. How many people actually get that reference that we did poorly?
I think some people. Well, let us people. Know. Let us know in the comments. So, long way of just saying, Rich, when we're looking at villains and they have this greater good philosophy about themselves in the story, why they can become the villain is we see from the hero's point of view, look at the innocent person they're killing, that life. Look at how they're affecting this or me or that. So from our character's point of view, it's very easy to go, villain just is slaughtering people, doing evil things. That's an evil thing that you're doing. So why do you think that that can sometimes be cliche for the villain? Where do you hate it? And can it be done well? Where do you love it?
Ultimately, I have been mostly tired of the character motivation of the greater good. For the most part, it most of the time bothers me.
Why?
Because, I don't agree with the philosophy for the most part, mm-hmm. and it mostly seems like a cope. Rather than like the character truly believing it, it seems more like they are selfish and they want these things, and they're using the idea of the greater good to pretty up what they're doing to make themselves not feel as bad. Instead of a character, so where it actually is pretty good and pretty fun is a character that does truly believe it, like has true convictions. So honestly why Thanos is fun.
I was going to say, Thanos has that conviction.
He's compelling because it's like, no, he believes. He believes he's doing this all for the greater good. He truly believes he's doing the right thing rather than a villain who is vindictive, selfish, power hungry, and then ultimately says, like, you know, when they're finally confronted, oh, it's all for the greater good, and it's all just to inflate their ego. That's where I'm not a big fan of it. It just kind of seems tired and a cope. It's not as compelling.
Yeah, because when you're saying this character, they're saying it's for the greater good, sometimes that's their motivation. That's just what they say. Thanos' motivation is he was a kid and saw his people get wiped out.
Yeah.
And seeing them get wiped out, he linked that to it being a population problem and therefore thinks he's doing the right thing. So when we walk back Thanos, it's going, he has an actual motivation. He grew up with this and thinks he's right. Mm-hmm. And you're saying the villain that we see in typical name any movie or book where it's, the greater good, the villain that we see is using that. We don't see their link of reasoning. They kind of just use it after doing villainy things. And it's just kind of a cheap way of excusing bad actions.
Yeah. And it could be done well when they're kind of called out on it. When the movie or book or whatever media treats it as, no, it is an excuse. It's not actually their real motivation. That can be interesting, but I think I have a conflict where the story is treating that as an actual motivation when it's not set up in a very clear way. You know what I mean?
No, go more into that.
The disconnect is the story is trying to tell you that, oh, the villain's motivation is that they believe it's all for the greater good. But when the story is explained, it shows the villain doing things for a vindictive reason or doing things for just power or out of anger. A lot of times that's a big one where the villain lashes out in anger and kills somebody. And then ultimately by the end, it's like, oh, I did this all for the greater good. It's like, what about that time? You lashed out, like, that person didn't need to die. That was clearly just because you're angry and spiteful. So it's that aspect of, no, clearly this person's just evil and you're trying to dress it up as they have a point.
Something is deeper. Yeah. Is it part of that problem of people trying to create sympathetic villains?
Kind of the same thing with how people took the Joker movie in many ways. Like, I like the movie. I like the movie quite a lot. But
I don't as much, but that's, yeah.
The Joker is a villain. It explains why he's a villain, but he's not a good guy. And ultimately, not particularly sympathetic. Like, you can feel sorry for him, but it's not justified. He's not doing it for, one, he's not doing it for the greater good. It's just, he's a broken man. Does all these things.
Linking it to society, right.
But that disconnect where a watcher can look at that and go, oh, it makes a great point. It's like, no, he doesn't. He's insane.
And that Joker, more classic example, like Taxi Driver, where it's taking that person beaten down by society. And it's not, you know, like you're saying, it's not really greater good. It's just more so creating a sympathetic, evil person.
Better example is stuff like Fight Club and Patrick Bateman and Psycho.
Oh, I don't spoil for me. I've not seen. Yeah, don't. Oh, slow down for me.
I will be talking outside.
Yeah, talk around.
I'm talking around, but people have watched it kind of understand that the cultural zeitgeist surrounding it. Yeah, so with Psycho, or American Psycho, sorry. It's a great movie. Fantastic movie. But there's a lot of people that see idealize the main character. And because it's kind of explained well and it's done in an interesting way, people start sympathizing with him and thinking that he's actually, like, not kind of the cool guy. And that's where it gets kind of messed up of, like, don't buy into the villain.
That's one of the reasons that I really dislike movies like Joker and Taxi Driver. I know I know Taxi Driver is a classic. I know you're gonna comment like, Austin, how could you not like that masterpiece?
Yeah.
But I see so much a kind of almost like the movie's trying to be like, hey, you could be this person, or maybe that's the wrong way of putting it. It's just it's trying to.
I think often the movie's doing the right thing. It's that people watch it and take the wrong message from it.
Maybe it's the viewers I dislike more than the movie itself.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
I actually have heard people talk. I think the director of Fight Club even said in some interview of like a red flag in a guy is if a guy says his favorite movie is Fight Club. Not that, like, Fight Club's a good movie. Great movie.
Yeah.
Really fun movie. But if a guy, like, right out of the gate is like, oh, yeah, it's my favorite movie. Understand that, like, main character's not the good guy. Like, there's a lot of bad messages. You're not supposed to be here.
I know some zeitgeist. I haven't seen Fight Club. It's a horror.
I'm trying to talk around.
Oh no! I just know. I assume you're right on that movie. It's that kind of, if someone says they like something like this, is it a red flag?
Why do you like it?
Is there a red flag in the fantasy sci-fi community for if you like this book series?
100%.
There's something wrong. What book? Some people.
Mainly nerds. Like, you're a nerd, but that's different.
Of course.
It's what message are you taking from this? Like, that's the problem when you make the villain the main character and you make him like too sympathetic, and the author behind it is trying to say like, hey, I'm trying to show a sympathetic villain, but they're still a villain. You're not supposed to take their side.
Right.
And then when people start going like, oh, they're actually the good guy, it's like, no, none of that.
Yeah.
So that ties back into like the greater good thing. The idea wouldn't be like, oh, Thanos did nothing wrong. Or
going like, hey, there is a population problem.
Like, oh, yeah, no, Thanos has a point. Like, no, he doesn't. He's the fucking villain. Wrong. He's wrong. He's not only morally wrong. He's also mathematically wrong.
Yeah, you've done this 100 times.
I'm right. I'm right.
This
is an appropriate time to bring it up.
It is. And I'm thinking back. This is an episode we did like 100-something episodes ago.
Yeah.
Where there's a short I edited of, it was so long ago, but it's in my head of you bashing Thanos constantly.
Yes.
And rightfully so.
I mean, he got the math wrong.
He did get the math wrong.
He needs to take a basic economics course.
Is it Malthusian? Is that what the term is? Malthusians who believe that there's a population problem and.
Oh.
Like in the real world,
yeah, it's kind of
like,
I think Thanos is a
villain that is, I can double check that, just a fact check real quick. Let's look, Malthusian, faster rate than me. Yes, it's Malthusian. Malthusianism, which Thanos takes that as in there's a population problem in the galaxy, therefore we must weed out half the population so that.
Basically, there's a set amount of things and it's like.
And then he goes and kills all the producers of people that would be able to promote more growth. Thanos, of course, being wrong. But with that greater good, at least Thanos has that conviction of character-wise and motivation. You believe that he's doing it for that reason.
Now, how do you think that comes across? If you're a writer, how do you make it so that the character truly believes? How do you make that difference? Like, if the author wants the character to come across as authentically truthful in their convictions of doing these awful things for an actual greater good, how are you supposed to do that?
I think the moment with Thanos was when he killed his daughter. Mm-hmm. So maybe giving the villain or hero, whoever it is, an emotional pull or an action, because all characters are actions, reactions. You give them a scene, an action, something instead of them saying, hey, the quote we have in the title is, quote, the greater good. Because you hear villains say that term, the greater good. I don't think Thanos says that once. Thanos does actions that he says he's going to wipe out half the population for. I don't think he says that exact line that we cringily see sometimes. If you ever see in a book, the greater good. So, with Thanos and actually being confronted with actions that show he cares more about this end goal than he does about his own happiness and well-being, because he would rather not kill his daughter.
That's a key, is when
literally above my own interests.
When the villain's making a personal sacrifice for their goal, I think that's the integral part of that equation. And it's like, oh, they actually believe what they're saying.
Oh my God, he's crazy.
that's the compelling moment of, oh, they're not just putting on airs. they truly believe it.
Yeah.
Now, we've been talking about villains on this side of things. How does this whole character motivation work with the hero?
But right before that, do you want to give another example of villains? Because we've been saying Thanos a lot. Can we say without spoiling for book-wise? Because I don't know if there's anything...
Villain-wise, there's quite a few. I can also think quite of a few heroes that I'm trying to... non-spoiler, but yeah. I would say Empire Silence, the Sun Eater series, is a great...
Hero. Yeah, gotcha.
It's
with the hero.
But it plays.
Because
there's so many.
Well, the thing is, there's not as much as an example.
First law.
Okay.
If you know, you know. I can't say anything.
I'm reading that very soon.
High spoilers. Yeah. But yes.
Okay. Awesome. Because I wanted to see with the villains that do it in books, is it that conviction?
Sure. We kind of also have it with Red Rising. A ton with Red Rising.
Yes.
That's
It's a big theme. Yeah.
And that's where some of the villains play it differently. There's a couple of the villains where like they truly believe it's for the greater good, and a couple others say it's for the greater good in the greater society when actually they just want power for themselves. It's a selfish endeavor rather than a high moral endeavor.
And then
high goal.
Exactly. Then going right into our heroes where we're going to keep spoiler light on this, but series like Red Rising and others where the heroes could become more gray, and Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, where there's more gray character actions, depending on what you do and what your end result is. And because I think the greater good thing is way more interesting from hero. And all we really mean by hero is they're our protagonist.
Sure.
Because if you go in the eyes of, hey, this is the person that the author is going to make you empathize with. Because if it's from, Thanos is we're just using that as a very broad example that everybody can be familiar with. But if you take the protagonist being any quote-unquote villain again, or an anti-hero, there's a lot of anti-heroes who also can believe the ends justify the means or the ends explain the means. When it comes from your hero, that's where you can get really interesting both lessons and a lot more compelling narrative, I think, than the villain side. Do you agree?
Somewhat. To a certain degree, yes. It just popped into my head of a great example is John Gwen's Malice, not trilogy, four books. First book is Malice. What is the whole series called?
It is Bloodsong.
No, The Faithful and the Fallen.
Oh, wait, which one's Bloodsong? Is that his others?
That's his other series.
Gotcha.
But Faithful and Fallen deals with a single character deals with it more than the others. But the whole idea is the character believes it's for the greater good.
Mm.
And you see that's the central core belief as the character. And then as they keep going, that starts to chip away. And they can't justify that to themselves anymore.
Right.
And it's really compelling to see that conviction fall apart. That's where it's kind of fun to see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with someone like Hadrian Marlowe, one of the definitely more compelling characters of fiction I've read in a long time. And he deals with that exact idea of, is this for what is the greater good? And does it justify it? Do I have the right to do this? And things like that. Or
a lot of the times the hero's flaw, because when we're talking about greater good, there's, I think, four big elements we could talk about with characters: your flaw, wants, needs, and then what's your actual motivation. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about a character's, that's the last cost for sure. So if we're talking about characters' motivations, sometimes a hero's and protagonist's flaw can be they're not willing to stoop to a certain level. Like, they're too good. They won't kill a life.
That's like the surface level you see all the times in like young adult fiction of, it's probably one of the more annoying tropes for me of, you know, the villain does these terrible, awful things and like murders 50
thousands.
People.
Oh, thousands. Okay. You went 50. I went that. It's a bit different. But yeah.
Still. And then they come across and then finally the hero has him on his back and like, surrender, villain. And then the villain's like, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to kill them all. And he goes, I won't kill you because that would make me the same as you.
That is my least favorite trope in all of anything. You just killed thousands of people, protagonist. Why are you not killing the one that is actually committing genocide? Well, what are you doing, buddy? What's going on? That is very frustrating because I'm even talking about the character that doesn't. There's those characters that don't even kill the cannon fodder. The person that's unwilling to kill. I mean, you could have your.
You do have the thing is that's better than the one that kills the cannon fodder, but then won't kill the main villain, and it's like, oh my god, Jesus Christ,
100%. Yeah, but I think where you can get into the interesting when we're talking about the greater good philosophically, where a character won't kill, they won't do something because they want to achieve this goal, but they're not willing to commit a certain action. But sometimes their arcs
are. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Are learning they have to do something bad to achieve a good. And the interesting thing I think just readers get out of that is going, what would you do in that situation? Also, can you blame them? Or it makes them more gray? Because you can have your very clear heroes, you can make them killing cannon fodder because they're just bad guys. Mm-hmm. Right? You can have every book behind us pretty much has scenes of our heroes killing orcs or
the goblin thing, yeah.
Anything. Or human who's just evil, bad, little mini boss, and we don't even bat an eye on it because they're just their side little villain that didn't matter.
To that point, I think one of the better examples of that exact character motivation and flaw, it's done amazingly with Daredevil. The Netflix show, specifically season 3, I think, is one of the best seasons of television I've seen. Period, bar none. Damn. I love it. Damn. But it deals with, like, Daredevil is a Catholic. He won't kill. He does a lot of other stuff. Very rageful. He's beating up all these criminals. He's got his vices. But he believes that it is not up to him. It is up to God who lives and dies. And, like, it's not his choice.
He's like, not utilitarian. He is believes in a deity. Yeah.
But thing is, he's really tested. Like, he's given every justifiable reason to take a life, and no one would blame him, but he would blame himself. And it's heroic when he doesn't become corrupted. He doesn't give into it. He has all the reasons, and then he finds another way to go, like, I will not let you change me. I will not let you break me for this. Like, he figures out another way. He conquers his rage. He conquers his desires to ultimately hold to his ideal. And that's great. It's well done. It's one of the best examples of the hero not killing the villain rule.
Because he's showing his conviction. Just like if a villain would show their conviction, they actually believe that what they're doing is right.
Especially when it shows that the main character really struggled with it. Like, it was an option on the table, and they have a reason for not doing it, instead of a loose example of they're just not doing it because killing's wrong. And that's it. Like, they just think killing's bad. I'm never going to do it. There's never a reason. It's more interesting if the main character has all the reasons, that sees the greater good from it. Like, no, there, a lot of things would be better if this person was dead. A lot of things, contemplates it, really gets it, understands that that's the right decision. Like, there is a lot of good reasons to do it, but then has a different one and a stronger conviction not to.
Yeah.
Rather than just go, oh, killing's bad. No, not enough when the scales are tipped.
So I know you have a lot of opinions when it comes to pacifists in books. Sure. I do too. Certain characters, Stormlight character.
Liren.
Let's not give any more than that, but he's a little bit frustrating because
I hate him.
your pacifism, just as much as your ability to kill cannon fodder or end justifying the means with the greater good, whether you're a complete pacifist like Daredevil or willing to kill any innocent. And
Daredevil's not a pacifist. He beats a lot of people up.
Oh, I haven't seen it. So a pacifist in the sense he won't kill. How about that?
Sure.
Pacifist on killing. And then you have that's true. Because pacifist would be no harm whatsoever, no violence. And then your villain that's willing to kill any innocent for the utopia. Those are your two ends of the spectrum. Mm. If you're able to, with the extreme pacifist or with the horrendous villain, to show that they're convicted and show that what they're... their actions are justified, not justified, their actions are explained with conviction, with Thanos getting a personal, something that personally hurt him, or a pacifist doing something that would personally hurt them over actually killing another person, even if they're evil. So if the pacifist is willing to inhibit their own life and make their life more inconvenient or have personal trauma in order to save a worse person than them, then you're like, well, hey,
well, that's the whether you go, they stay with their conviction or they don't, it's compelling when they're really, truly tested.
Yeah.
So with the pacifist, you put them in a scenario where you give them all the reasons why they should break it. Give them all the justifications to not, basically to take another life. And then either direction they go, it's still interesting. Whether they break and they go, yeah, I will take a life because there's all these reasons to do it.
Right.
Whatever it is. That's compelling. Interesting why he made that choice. It's also compelling when they hold true to their convictions. Same thing with a villain. You can actually – I don't know too many examples of it, but a villain who has these convictions of like willing to do anything that justifies the means, and then it's sympathetic of now there's a personal stake.
Yeah.
If, you know, it takes the cost of their daughter to accomplish their end goal.
Then do they do it?
And if they maybe hold back. So better example of Vader, Darth Vader. He was evil, but ultimately the cost of his goal in the Empire would cost the life of his son. And he steps away. He is not willing to kill his son for the sake of the Empire.
Dude, that's major spoilers.
Oh, well.
to those out there that didn't know Vader was Luke's father, that's...
We're ultimately getting at, though, their conviction, no matter what, has to be truly tested. And it's annoying when they have this belief and they stick with it. And there's, from the reader's perspective, we don't get why they hold so tightly to it.
It's like that we can kind of relate that. There's so many ways to relate that in real life, but you know, COVID hits and we all go, oh man, if I just had the time, I'd learn a language. I'd start coding. I'd gain a fifth sense. I just need time. And then we all had time. And we came out worse people.
Yeah.
we collected as a group and went, you know what? Let's honestly run it back because it gave great excuses to not be, hey, I can't go out.
I can't meet you for lunch thing. Ah, COVID.
Yep. It's not that I don't like you.
I'll be honest. COVID did not stop me on.
Well, also.
It was great for some social events, but I'll be honest.
You picked and choose. You went and.
Oh, no.
Does this benefit me more or less?
I'll be honest. I think I went out more during COVID because there weren't as many lines and I felt great about it.
You could just drive anywhere.
Also, like if I wanted to like not be around a person, like someone was. In there, and I'm going like, that person's just too close to me.
Is that why you?
I would just take off my mask, and they would step 6 feet away. I'm going like, this is good. This is like a personal force field of social interaction. You're like, I left my mask. Sorry, and then they just go away.
Your ends justified your means. You explained your means.
It explained it. Sure. I was willing to risk COVID to avoid certain social interactions.
I it's like you had a bomb just right on your mouth. Yeah.
Get away.
So with we're talking about heroes, and when it's done right or wrong with heroes, it comes down to the conviction whether you're a super pacifist. But what I think is even the most interesting part about the greater good is it doesn't even have to do with the utilitarian concept of is it worth it? Is it justified in the end? But if you can make your hero do something and justify to the reader, justifying a bad action. Or like, you know,
sure.
you walking around instead of the whole mask, like walking around nude. Can you justify Rich walking into a Publix butt-ass naked? If an author can convince me that there's a scenario where that's justified or explained.
That's impressive.
That's damn impressive because trust me, the poor cashier, she's just reaching Social Security and then she looks over to a furball, a furry lover, one. He's like, oh my goodness, is that one of the furry? And then she just goes, oh, this has ruined my day. Anyways.
Thanks.
So if you can justify with your main character and make them do a villainous action, but some of our favorite heroes and one of my favorite arcs is a redemption arc or a failed redemption arc. And a lot with redemption arcs is you can... A lot of the redemption arcs is kind of the post the greater good.
In sure, they did an awful thing thinking that it was for the greater good.
And then in retrospect are trying to build back from them committing the villainous action.
It's hard to go the other way of where they did a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And they did it for terrible reasons too.
Yeah.
And then they're trying to do a redemption arc, which it is done. Like it, but that's certainly harder to do.
Yeah.
And normally, like, standard storytelling, like, if you were a paint-by-numbers, if the villain did a terrible thing for terrible reasons and then goes through a redemption arc, their redemption arc is ended with their death, that they can't live after their redemption arc. Versus someone who did a terrible thing for a maybe justifiable or explainable reason, thought it was for the greater good, can go through the redemption arc, and they're the ones that can live after the redemption arc.
I like that a lot.
I think that's the paint. These aren't rules, but I think that's like the paint by number thing.
Just generic, hey, this is what you can
like,
see.
You just get that feeling.
Yeah.
There's just some characters where you go, like, yeah, you can redeem that character, but they're not allowed to live after this story.
Right.
They gotta go.
They did too many bad things.
They did too many things for no good reasons.
Yeah.
They're dead.
Yeah. And drawing that line because some of my favorite protagonists did the most heinous things, just evil, evil things. We know what big series,
bad
things, but
very bad things.
One of my favorite characters of all time,
mm-hmm.
Love him. You've got to keep it super vague, but no, just Stormlight. But don't go beyond that. Yeah, just love certain characters, and maybe you're again. This is. Just the power that an author has, the magic an author has, is just they can frame a hero or villain however they like. Just like in the snap of a finger, they can skip 1,000 years or 1 second. Sanderson has this great advice on his BYU lectures where pacing of a story is, the author can play God with you and just go, oh, look, yeah, the character you were following for 75% of the book, they died. This is seven generations late. What? Now, obviously, your promise progress payoff, you'd be thrown off unless that was properly built up. So yeah, there's a certain kind of intrinsic continuity that you need to have. Despite that, when the author can also play God with their character, they're showing you, hey, do I want to show you the, if the hero is doing the bad thing, if that redemption arc doesn't happen and they're doing the part one where they commit the heinous action, they can have them be the villain of the story. And we look at it from the innocent bystander, the innocent protagonist that's looking at this evil person doing whatever thing. Or we can then look at that hero who did commit a genocide years or decades ago, or did a thing to like justify the means. And now we're looking at them dealing with this in a different context of, are they a different person? Are they a changed man? Are they a changed woman? Who are they now? Essentially author playing God with this concept.
I think we're getting down to how it works and why it doesn't. In some cases, it doesn't matter where they start. It doesn't matter kind of even where it ends and how there's normally a singular moment. Like there's got to be a clear moment where their current beliefs are tested truly, and that when they come out the other side, it was a hard decision. If they never have, if they have this idea of the greater good and they never come to a hard decision, good or bad, then it's just not compelling. I think that's the main takeaway here, is whether they're a hero and then they're not going to kill. If your message at the end of the story is like, hey, this hero and they're no killing rule, well, you have to put them in a scenario where it's really hard not to kill them. They got every good reason and they come out the other side, they still won't kill. It's like, okay, look, they were really tested. They truly believe it. And a villain who does all these stuff for the greater good, and that's what they say, and then they come to a moment they're truly tested, where it's a personal sacrifice for them to hold their conviction. And whether or not they break or stay convicted, that's compelling. But ultimately, it needs to be for the greater good to be a good motivation for a character. They ultimately have to have some type of personal sacrifice if that's their justified reason. And if it comes down to the personal sacrifice – and they're not willing to do it, then the greater good is stripped away.
That's, really well said, because when we're talking about our own personal philosophy, every reader is looking at these characters and themes and stories, and we have our own opinions on this is what I think is the right or wrong thing to do. And then the author framing it a certain way, as you're discussing. But personally speaking, when you're reading something like that, are you inclined... Let me backtrack with one thing to say. We're reading stories and we feel empathy. We're getting feelings. We're either feeling excitement, sadness. We're getting an emotional connection. We're not looking at, it's not math. This is completely, we're having a personal experience with a story, and it's sometimes, most of the time, getting across a message, and hopefully a beautiful message or something that just makes you think, long lasting. When you're reading a book, how much does your personal philosophy on utilitarianism or consequentialism versus can you ever justify something like that? Can that ever get in the way for you liking a certain arc or believing in a certain message?
I think it would be unfair, or it wouldn't be honest of me to say, no, it never interferes. Of course it does. Like if an author is writing a character and the character's justification is something where I just personally don't believe in, and they're trying, and then the author is trying to make the character a hero, I'm going like, no, they're not. I don't think so. And that makes it hard for me to connect with it. But I think outside of my personal beliefs, if I see the character was well and truly tested and they're not holding surface level beliefs, but we see in the story they are confronted with their decision and they're confronted with a choice. No matter what they pick, that's at least compelling.
Yeah.
It's not compelling if they have a belief and they're never tested. And then ultimately you go, is that a facade? Is it a real belief? Is that just what they tell themselves to get through the day?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's one thing with stories too. Of course, our own biases are going to make us may like or dislike a message more. But something I found with this whole discussion on morality and subjective versus objective morality. Again, check out that episode. Also, check out our Patreon if you want
to
join us for
monthly book club. Oh, yeah, we're supposed to chill for ourselves.
I got you.
I put on the hat and everything.
Actually, you got it. You got the hat on.
I got the hat. Yeah, yeah. No, we got stuff that you get things, we get money. It's pretty neat. You get a bookmark. We put a lot of time and work into that. So, yeah, check out our fourth wall store, tutorramble.com. Do that. Also, if you like book clubs and talking with us about books, join our Patreon.
Hey.
It's pretty cool. Once a month, we got book clubs and awesome community.
American Gods up by now. We had Malaz in the month before. We'll see what gets. We'll see what you guys vote on it. We read it. We discuss it with you.
Well,
gone from there.
We have taken away some voting power from the people.
Don't tell them that.
No. They should know that democracy is cringe. It's reigned in democracy.
Give them the feigned belief that it's a democracy.
That's the best part. Yeah.
Teeter their totter a little bit. Like, we're gonna
believe it's democracy.
Exactly.
And then take the choice away. That's the right way to do it.
This is how all.
Well, isn't that how, like, that's how monarchy, that's how our government works. That's how companies work. You know, the whole idea of, like, the illusion of choice. It placates the masses.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So all that, we have a book club. That point I was making that you're about to remind me about was very fascinating.
My guess is that you were going down the direction
I was going the direction of subjectivity versus objectivity. I was telling people to check that out. So anyways, looking at the framework of for personal belief, and I've found that when I'm reading more books, watching movies, doesn't matter what kind of story it is, when you don't believe in a god, especially, or a deity, but you're very curious, and, like, again, we've had Thomas on for that collab, and I want to have more religions on. Kanlu, who we talked to, was a Taoist.
Like, that was a lot of fun.
We should have a whole religion discussion on some episode here, because clearly we're super into looking into this. So I found that the more I read, and if I read one book that's justifying and justify the means, the other one shows how it's so horrible. The more perspectives and the more stories I read, the more I realize I don't know, even though I'm learning these amazing messages and going, well, in that case, that's the answer. But in that case, that led to bad, bad. That case was good, good. And so I think the answer is read less. Just read one book.
The more you learn.
And pick your philosophy on that one book.
The more you learn, the more you find out that you don't know anything.
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
That's part of it. It's also most people, ourselves included, are midwits.
Midwits. Like, we're not low wits. We're mid.
No, but here's the thing. This gets in the I personally think the bell curve of, like, intelligence, that the ends are actually far more correct than the people in the middle. Because the midwit, dumb person,
yeah.
Dumb person that goes like, hey, that's wrong because it's wrong. And, you know, like, it feels bad to do that thing. It's not good. Like, that, and then the highly intellectual, like, it's wrong because of the justification by going through society and the effects that are long-lasting. We see these cultural differences over generations, and this is why we see a repeatable pattern of these moral lessons. All that stuff, like, that's the highly intelligent. They come to the same conclusion. It's the midwits that are going – that are able to, because they know some things, they're able to justify a lot of bullshit.
Kind of conjecture.
Exactly.
Things,
and
yeah.
You're following the masses, and you're, because you know enough, you know nothing.
Can I just ask you one thing? Why was your dumb voice a Southern voice?
Yeah, you know, that's fine. Folks, I was going for folksy wisdom.
You don't
and
think
folksy wisdom comes from this? I'm calling them the heroes. You understand that?
I know. I'm just saying.
That's my family.
Good.
Most of my mother's side of the family is from Alabama. So, like, Alabama, Louisiana, that's where all my family is. They're
how
great
do you,
people.
How do you say the word S-T-L-O-U-I-S? How would you say that?
What?
S-T-L-O-U-I-S. How would you say that out loud?
Oh.
Saints?
Yeah.
How'd you say it?
St. Louis?
There you go. Yeah, I just want to see if you had the little accent down there.
Yeah. I can pull out the accent if I want.
A little St. Louis.
Yeah. I've been with my cousins down there.
I've been down yonder on the Chattahoochee.
I will say, like, I don't like country music all the time, but when I'm down there, country music is the best.
Hey, we love some Zac Brown Band. I'm not even kidding. I respect. Oh, my.
Point being, folksy wisdom right. is correct.
And the radio. Oh. So I'm just singing Zac Brown now. Okay. Anyways, you think Southern Britons are dumb? I love you guys. I'm just saying.
No, my point is they agree. They and the, like, super high intellectuals that waste all their time thinking. Again, it's a waste of time. Like, understand that the people who
I totally get your point. Yeah.
That don't waste their time thinking about a bunch of stupid things. They actually get to living. They live life and they act.
They're
on
a
their
higher level of being. They are the
they're living
the
correct.
Marcus Aureliuses, the ones who say, let the philosophers. Yes. So Stoicism is just let the philosophers philosophize. Let them think. I will just do actions. I will.
There comes a point that you should stop thinking about things and then just live life.
Yes.
Rather than constantly overanalyzing stuff to the point where you know nothing now.
I do want to say, well, I want to have an episode. I want to write this on the self-help books. I have personally not read like a purely self-help book, so I don't have much.
Sure.
I've read
philosophies
or I've read things that I guess you could say is self-help because it's philosophical or some adjacent. But maybe there's a point to be made about self-help books where, yes, they can be good, and maybe in moderation. Hey, this is coming again from, I'm the midwit, the conjecture.
Yep.
Of is there a point where you can read like 1,000 self-help books to where someone's even contradicting other advice that you're getting? And at what point do you go from reading the book to real world where we have a fantasy and sci-fi thing, addiction. We love this thing. At what point, Rich, do we set down the torch and pass it on to the next bunch of podcasters out there and go, listen, we went in the world of make-believe long enough. We're going to pass it on to the next generation.
I have that feeling sometimes. There are days where I'm going like, you know what? Maybe I should read some more history instead.
Yeah.
Like, I've lived in the fantasy world too many times, too long.
But at the same time, then we read history, we go into the real world, we go, the fuck is this?
Fuck is this? This what? Is stupid.
I want to go back to that.
Turn on the news and go, no more of that.
No. Give me swords and magic.
Turn off CNN.
It's so much more fun.
No, and then none
when
of
you
that.
When you have swords and magic, nothing's wrong in life.
Well, again, it goes to prove that learning more about the real world events, what am I going to do about it? I can't do anything. Like, cool, I can vote, like, my local election. Yay. I'm not going to solve problems in the Middle East. What am I going to do about it? What? Me knowing more about the situation elsewhere in the world, how does that solve anything?
Dude, you could totally do great as like that random Twitter user with 10 different numbers at the end of their username.
Oh, yeah. No, that's great.
You'd be a great little schlop in the masses. Like, I don't like the thing.
Well, that's the point. It's like, do you really think you saying I don't like the thing on Twitter is really going to change anything? No, it isn't. It has zero effect. It's much better to spend that 5 seconds of time doing literally anything else.
Like commenting on our video saying I like the thing. That's better than
that's
going
better.
On to Twitter.
Well,
listen, come
well,
here.
Here's the thing. Here's why it's better.
Yeah.
You have a much better chance of like someone actually reading it and hearing that thought rather than the big sea storm of whatever today
including
politics.
Us. I read every YouTube comment like 95%. I might miss one occasionally.
Same here.
But we read them.
Yeah.
We love your comments. Especially the ones that are nicer to us. you guys are so nice to us. The only times we get like bad comments is really the shorts and TikTok game.
Yeah.
YouTube's very
and that,
friendly
like,
to
you
us.
You can understand guys. It. Like it's out of context stuff. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah. Honestly, most people are going to sit and watch super long podcasts. The people that don't like us already clicked off. Or if you're hate watching, let us know as well because.
Convicted. Now,
if you guys are convicted.
If you're at this point and you do hate us, please comment down below because that's a different level. I don't. Well,
but
do
you,
I hate
well, can,
watch?
Can you?
Like, there are people on the internet I don't like. Uh-huh. It would be very hard for me to sit through their entire video. That's hard. That's impressive. That's a deep level of hatred. They were tested. Their hatred and their beliefs was tested. They sat through the whole thing.
And they think they're spewing their hate in the comment section by watching the whole thing is for the greater good, to show other people why they hate them. They are saying, essentially, I hate them so much, I need to understand how bad they are so I can hate them more.
I want to hate them more accurately.
Yes. Exactly. And then they comment, they go, I'm going to spread how much I hate them to make these people bad. Shame, shame, shame on you. And that, no, I'm saying that's what the people are saying. They're saying, yeah, shame on you, creator, who's doing bad thing number 27.
Ugh.
And they're
how dare you express an opinion that is deviant of mine?
It is deviant.
It is deviant. And we don't want it in Uganda.
You showed me that meme. Oh,
oh, it's so good.
And if you get,
oh, God, that guy is hilarious.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. It is a sickness. It is deviant. Therefore, we do not want it.
We've been, I think, doing every accent on this episode so far. Gone Southern, Ugandan. What else? Yeah. You did like a little bit of a highbrow accent. What was that, English?
Oh. I can't do a British accent.
I think you could pull it off.
No, it's not. I'm not a man for accents.
All right. Well, this has been an episode about the greater good that
somehow
we get a little bit loose by the end. I think these characters.
Well, we were loose in the beginning and then by the end.
We promise we paid off, hopefully, too. So we're going to have some more character motivation explorations.
Yeah, comment down below of like which character motivations you want us to go through and talk about. And it'll be interesting for us to go deeper into it.
Let's do it. All right. Bye, everybody. See you next episode.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.